clearly something amazing happened in the life of what we call the beloved disciple, the author of our gospel and the author of a series of letters that we find at the end of the New Testament. Tradition holds that John was the youngest of the 12 apostles. He's also the only apostle to die of old age rather than being martyred. And so when it comes time for him to write about his experiences, to put into all of the things that he experienced, he saw and touched firsthand, but also all of the things that he was able to ponder upon, all of those mysteries, the way that he would pray with the scriptures and allow those words to slowly become part of his very being, his very essence. And we're able to get these amazing insights into what he was trying to be about. In the same community wrote the letter that we call 1 John. And it begins with this beautiful reflection. We declare to you what was from the beginning, what we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands, concerning the word of life. This life was revealed, and we have seen it, and we testify to it. And we declare to you the life unto the age that was with the Father and was revealed to us. We declare to you what we have seen and heard, so that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. We are writing these things so that our joy may be complete. That's the first four verses of 1 John. He tells us about his experiences. He opens to us the sense of all that he had seen and heard. He remembers that night when it was the Last Supper, the night before Jesus died, when he leaned so closely to the person of Jesus that his head rested on the heart of Jesus. And he wants us to experience the same thing, that when we go to that Last Supper, when we go to any time that we celebrate the Eucharist, he invites us to do the same. He invites us to draw close to Jesus, to rest our heads on the very heart of Jesus, in finding our identity and finding our truth. John is also the first of the male disciples to believe in Jesus. Mary Magdalene beat him to the punch in her own belief and her own expression of all of that. But John is the one that is so deeply in love with Jesus and knows himself to be so deeply loved by Jesus that of course he believes. Of course he comes to that place where he doesn't need a whole bunch of evidence. He doesn't need all of these sights and sounds. He's able to see because his heart has been changed by the very encounter with love. John doesn't tell us his name. He doesn't say this is John writing in any of his the gospel or his letters. He leaves it open. He says this is just the beloved disciple. And scholars say that is inviting space for us, inviting space for anyone who reads his letters or reads his gospel, to insert ourselves there into the story, to place ourselves there, to know that just as John felt himself so loved by God, so also we can experience that same delight, that same reality of what God originally intended for us. We know that in the very beginning, that God wanted to walk with us. He created us to love us. He created us to be in communion with him. He created us to be in covenant relationship with us, to walk with God in the cool of the evening breeze, to be there in the very presence of God. But so often we stuffed it up. We as human beings, we as the people of Israel, we as all of those who have gone before us, And we ourselves know the reality of our sin. But none of that takes away the desire of God. None of that takes away the longing that God had. Because just as Moses encountered the Father, encountered God there on the mountain with the burning bush, and God said to Moses, I know the sufferings of my people. I have seen their distress. I have heard all of their cries. God still knows the cries of our hearts. Our world is deeply in distress. Our world has so many troubles, and our own lives have so many troubles. Even so, God knows and sees and hears and loves us even so. And he longs for us to encounter him. He longs for us to be caught up in this mystery. He longs for us, as we gather for the Eucharist tonight, to be fed and nourished at this table. He longs for us to recognize within ourselves that same call to be the beloved disciple. He longs for us to experience that intimacy with God. This whole journey through the season of Lent prepares us for this. It opens our hearts to this possibility of encountering. It calls us and reminds us that the kind of life that we so often live, the life which is a little bit half-hearted, the life that is not about that profound intimacy with God, that's not the original intention of God. He longs for us tonight to know ourselves as the beloved disciple, to know and experience that love that wants to wash our feet, so that we in turn can then act in service to others. The beloved disciple is all about this transformation that happens in love. As my spiritual director often reminds me, Richard, the one thing that no one can ever take away from you is the ability to love. And that for us is this desire to place ourselves before God's presence, to allow him to love us warts and all, and to allow God to see us truly as we are, to see our need, to know our desires, to hear our distress, and even so, to love us, even so, to call us back into that covenant commitment, even so, to set us free from all those things that enslave us, even so, to remind us of who we have been called to be in the beginning, even so, to allow us to become and to be the beloved disciples that we've all been shaped and called to be. Tonight, we have that privilege. We have that possibility of being fed and nourished back into the very life of God. Tonight, we have that chance to allow God to indeed call us by name, to be his beloved disciple, to lean upon the chest of Jesus, to place our heads upon his heart, and allow that love to transform us, to forgive us, to redeem us, and to allow us to be his beloved disciples.